Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen. Still waiting for Pastor Butch to get his strength back, but we're going to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's political and economic events. Wait for it, ladies and gentlemen. It's Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, Melody, it's a great hump day, isn't it?
Well, it's good to have you back on a Wednesday this week anyway. So thanks again for filling in for Butch. Absolutely. And we have Wendy Wilson joining us in here in just a few short minutes. So let's go ahead and get started with the market report again for January 27th, 2021. And yes, we had some pressure on gold. Right now, the New York spot price aftermarket down 810 at $1,843. Silver is down 21 cents at $25.34. Platinum was down 36 at $1,068. And palladium was down 23 at $2,388. Let's take a peek at the dollar. I mean, it's up. It was up 0.47, but it's still at 90.65. So it did push away from going down into that 89 territory. And again, would it go into free fall at 89? I don't think so. But there's 90 as being a pretty strong resistance. They don't want it to go below there. Crude oil is up 5 cents today at 52.66. We had a pretty good drop in the paper markets today. I'm going to go ahead and do the 10-year yield first, as some of these numbers are still coming through. The 10-year yield was 1.01. That's still down 0.03. All the European markets, they were all lower. Pretty much not as much as ours, though. London was down 1.30%. Germany was down 1.81%. And let's see. We have the Dow was down 632 points, 30,304, down just a little over 2%. The NASDAQ was down 355 points, almost 3% at 13,270. And the S&P was down a little over 2.5% at 3,750. So that's pretty much it in the markets today. Pretty nice sell-off after GameStop today. We'll talk about that later. We have Wendy Wilson, and we don't want to delay any longer as she brings such great information for everyone. Good afternoon, Wendy. Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Dave.
Hi there.
Hey, I thought we'd talk about who do you suspect is going to get the COVID vaccine. Okay, they've done surveys on this. I don't think we've covered the updated part of the surveys, because as more data rolls in, it's being revealed that, you know, the COVID vaccine, the numbers on how people accepting it's going to change, and that's what they're seeing. So at this writing, they're saying they estimate 16.4 million people worldwide are going to reject this COVID vaccine. And as the side effects get reported, and you have more deaths from the vaccine, because that's being updated as well. So you're going to see things change in the weeks ahead as people are willing or unwilling to accept the risk of taking the vaccine. Hospital Healthcare out of Europe said a sizable portion of people are unwilling to be vaccinated with COVID, which will impact the vaccination program. So at first, everybody's under the impression that if they get vaccinated, they wouldn't have to wear masks, they wouldn't have to social distance and all those other restrictions. However, that's not entirely what they're hearing. Where would people have gotten that impression, you know, that, hey, if I get the vaccine, that would remove all these restrictions? Well, it came from health authorities. This is what Hospital of Europe said. They said to root out the restrictions imposed on individuals because of COVID-19, a suitable vaccine product would be needed. So this is where people got that impression, okay, so if I take the vaccine, we can go back to normal. But that's not entirely accurate. They still want you to social distance, wear a mask, and do all the other stuff. So they had some predictors. You'll recall I mentioned previously that as soon as the COVID virus came on the scene, the research was done to see how well the public would accept a fast-track vaccine. And at the time, there was speculation that a portion of the public would be hesitant or skeptical about a hastily made product. So the herd immunity theory, though, has to have a large percentage, 90% of the population, to get the vaccine or the disease under control. So in some studies, the research felt that as time went on, from 2020 to 2021, the public would be more willing to receive the vaccine, especially with reported deaths going up. Now, researchers at the Department of Psychology, University of Liverpool in the UK, they analyzed over 20 previous surveys and articles from 13 countries, as well as some new data from represented samples of people that were surveyed on this vaccine. And the survey samples range from about 1,000 to over 7,000 individuals. So the healthcare professionals and the students were excluded from these surveys because they wanted to see what the general public's willingness was regarding the COVID vaccine. So they looked at the yes answers, the no answers, and the unsure answers, and also the unwilling answers. So the early surveys in March, last March 2020, they compared them to the surveys samples of May and then in June. And no surprise to me, the results did change. Here's a quote from the Department of Psychology, University of Liverpool. They say, the proportion of respondents willing to be vaccinated decreased over time with a drop of nearly 20%. The category of those unwilling to be vaccinated doubled. In contrast, the unsure category did not seem to change. A persistent trend regarding less likely to be vaccinated rested with the younger females, with the lower income and education groups, as well as with Hispanics, is what they said. So the university researchers are urgently recommending health authorities, the governments, address this hesitation or unwillingness to vaccinate immediately to prohibit widespread non-compliance. Is that, well, I don't know. What is your feeling on the vaccine? Do you guys want to go out and get it, or are you just not sure, or are you going to pass?
I'm going to get it.
You're going to get it? Okay. And anybody else want to weigh in?
I'm waiting.
You're waiting to see what happens?
Yeah, there was another article. You know, there's controversy over Pfizer's vaccine vials, you know. Mm-hmm. At first, it was thought that they'd have 5 doses in a vial, 6 doses. Now, maybe they're trying to get... It's like, you'd think that it would be all pretty a little more accurate.
Yeah.
Than what comes in a vial and how many doses.
Well, and if you look at vaccine treatments, a lot of times it's not a dose by weight. You know, a 300-pound man gets the same amount as a 100-pound woman. Yeah. So...
This doesn't have anything to do with the, as far as I knew, it didn't have anything to do with, but that's my, the point is, there's just all this, I mean, they were just rushed through.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Well, I know California pulled the Moderna vials. They had some problems with a lot, some subject to some sort of weirdness. And so they suspended using that vaccine in the state. They had both Moderna and Pfizer both had deaths on clinical trials. A lot of times the deaths happened within 2 weeks of those with underlying conditions. But of course the drug companies are hesitant to say it was the vaccine. So even that one gynecologist down in Dade County, Florida, 56-year-old healthy guy, gets it, dies in 2 weeks. His wife's convinced it was the vaccine, but the coroners are reviewing the research on investigating, and they don't think it was the vaccine. But you had those deaths happen within 2 weeks in the clinical trials. It's just a lot not coming out on that. Now, the government emergency...
Wendy, I mean, I don't mean to interrupt, but I mean, some people are going to react to it.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, when you look at the numbers, I mean, some people are going to react and you're going to have some deaths. So why don't they? I mean, is it the percentage of what they tested, which would, I mean,
Well, the thing is it's an RNA vaccine. So it's going to be affecting DNA within people. So not everybody's DNA is the same. So reactions will vary. And, of course, with the Pfizer one, since it has to be at such a low temperature, I think there's nanotechnology in that one. But you have to have an EpiPen standing by. That's what the FDA and the CDC recommended to doctors and emergency room specialists. If giving Pfizer, have an EpiPen, which is anaphylactic shock treatment, because usually it happens on an average of 15 minutes after getting the vaccine. So that's kind of scary. You know, they're telling that was released. So, you know, people are having reactions. And if you don't treat anaphylactic right away, you can die.
Yes, yes.
So
have you heard anything about the Johnson & Johnson that's coming out?
I haven't gotten enough on that yet. We're barely getting anything on Moderna. We're getting sketchy stuff that's dripped out. So, but no, I haven't on the Johnson & Johnson one, but we'll keep you apprised. But more data coming from the government technology emergency management area. That's part of U.S. Homeland Security, by the way. They reported that the COVID vaccine could end the pandemic, but 130 million Americans say they're going to skip taking it. So that's 40% of the U.S. population that's saying, I'm not going to get it. And when interviewing people in a survey, they got some very direct feedback. This was Derek Bronze. He's a Houston, Texas resident. He said, this is a science experiment for a vaccine against a virus that has a very high survival rate, and I have more concerns about the safety of the vaccine than the dangers from the virus. That was his take. Here is a state statistic. Only 42% of the population in Texas say they're going to get the vaccine. So another poll, this was from the Government Technology Emergency Management Division. They say poll after poll with alarming numbers say that people don't want the vaccine and don't plan on being inoculated with the COVID vaccine. So they're really upset about these numbers. And according to a lot of current reports from the medical establishment, that the new surveys show that people are showing distrust in the vaccine safety, and the authorities are blaming it on social media, circulation of misinformation, that kind of thing. So it stands to reason that when people read medical reports that it takes 15 years to develop a vaccine that's safe, and COVID was made in less than a year, people wonder if the vaccine will be safe. Now, the Government Technology Emergency Management Division stated there's a huge lack of trust with regard to the COVID vaccine. The U.S. agency feels Americans are, quote, squandering an opportunity to get the virus under control before it mutates and becomes more lethal. Now, we've hearing reports that it has already mutated, and especially in Europe it has. So we also hear from virologists that the virus has already changed, mutated, and therefore the vaccine is going to be somewhat less effective. So a lot of reports there also is stating a lot of communities aren't going to go back to normal until the government is convinced the virus spread is under control. So people want to go back to normal, and they don't want to have to get vaccinated and still have the restrictions. That's another argument people are saying. Now, here is another report from the Government Technology Emergency Management. They said the Biden administration will need to find ways to gain public trust in the CDC and the FDA to ensure communities take the vaccine. So gaining trust is not what I see the government doing, but it is more like, like in New York, they want you to get it if you want to continue to work, and I'm getting calls from people in New York about that. So the government knows. It has assessed the data, and they know the reasons people are refusing the vaccine. People doubt the vaccine safety. They doubt the pandemic is as serious as it is being promoted. Ideological views, conspiracy theories are in there, misinformation in the anti-vax movement, and also history, racism in minority communities was listed.
Oh, of course, you got to bring in racism. I mean, heck, why not?
Yeah.
That's
so
grief.
I know. And so, of course, if they're going to list some of the real reasons vaccines are really not so popular anymore, is that people are reading more on it, and they're becoming more educated. They're hearing interviews from medical professionals about it. It's not just, other people, it's people that are in the medical industry. And they have they've come out and they've talked about vaccines and why they don't use them anymore. So there's a lot of pediatricians and doctors that are kind of hesitant to use them. And they are saying a lot of what the scientific data says on vaccines isn't true. You can't duplicate the study. So that's a problem. Here's what Neil Johnson, he's a physicist at George Washington University, says, I estimate that in the recent months, 10% of people on Facebook are asking questions about vaccines and have switched anti-vaccine positions. Anthony Gastina, he's a 65-year-old North Texas who did get COVID. He said, why would I risk the vaccine mutating what my old body has taught itself already? So he recovered from it. And then this is Neil Johnson again. He says the CDC survey made public in November found just 63% of the healthcare professionals said they would get the COVID vaccine, which was barely different from the numbers found in the general public. So if healthcare professionals are skeptical about it, what is the general public? Why are we hammering the general public about it? Healthcare officials, these are nurses and doctors, and they're saying, hold on, hold on there. So I think being informed is important. Make your personal decisions. Get as much information as you can on any treatment before you go get it. And I personally am going to stick with my natural zinc because of the 2019 U.S. National Library of Medicine Institute of Health report says if you have adequate zinc, you won't get sick with COVID. So I'm sticking with that.
You know what? These vaccines, Wendy, even if they were all the same, but you can't have one that has to be kept at what? Why are they all so different?
Well, that's a good question. This is what the public's asking, Okay, so like if it's all going to be addressing COVID virus, why is one vaccine have to be 70 degrees minus, freeze point, and one just has to be thrown in a regular freezer? One has a shelf life of less than 5 days. One has a shelf life of 30. Is the difference? Well,
Johnson & Johnson is supposed to be one dose, and mm-hmm. they can be kept in,
Well, and they found over 21 therapeutic drugs that address COVID in 48 hours, just like, sending you home with an antibiotic for sinus infection. So there's really not a huge need for a vaccine when you got that kind of stuff on the shelf already.
Give us your contact info, Wendy.
Sure.
We're out of time.
Sure. 866-229-3663, thepowerherbs.com. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Wendy. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cedarstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cedarstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And not the money will. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Who has allergies in January? This lady does. So, you know, please forgive me. And I might ask Dave to take over every now and then if I have a spell. But I think if you listen to this program long enough, it's been a while. But I think if you listen to this program long enough, you know, I have my allergy problem. It's not COVID. I can taste. I can smell. 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Well, you know, we did have a big drop today, and the Fed did its best to keep its pedal to the metal in terms of the help it's providing for an economy that has slowed down. In keeping with market expectations, the FOMC said it was keeping its benchmark short-term borrowing rate at near zero. And, of course, it's going to be maintaining its asset purchasing program and buying at least $120 billion a month. What could go wrong? And, of course, at the core, and did anybody expect anything different? At the core of the move to keep policy historically accommodative and in an economy in which the sector's most vulnerable, of course, to the pandemic are, of course, being hit the hardest, the Fed continued to say the pace of the recovery in economic activity and employment has moderated in recent months, with weakness concentrated in the sectors most adversely affected by the pandemic. You know, I was watching a news program last night, Dave, and they were showing little commentaries from various people and so forth. And it's like, what did they say? You know, that's like, huh? It's a lot of words and they don't say much. This Fed statement's kind of the same thing.
I'm convinced they're an entrepreneurial opportunity out there would be an at-home translator that, you know, you put on as a headset, maybe one ear, maybe both, and it'll translate these obscure phrases that we hear all the time on our
I'm not even sure they have any meaning. They just have, they're just out there yakking.
Well, that would be half the fun to make some up along the way. I'm all in, by the way.
Oh, okay. The statement reiterated that the pandemic is causing tremendous human and economic hardship. Well, no shoot, Sherlock. I mean, come on. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure this one out. The committee otherwise left the statement unchanged, other than adding to its position that economic growth will depend, of course, on many other things, too, not just the pandemic. Remember, we were in a recession a year ago, before March, before anything was shut down. But, hey, it's a great thing to blame it on. And then all the bad decisions after that just made everything worse. The path of the economy will depend significantly on the course of the virus, maybe the course of government. The decision means that the Fed's fund rate, which serves as a benchmark for a variety of consumer debt instruments, is going to remain anchored at 0.25%, Dave.
Well, we know the Fed took the rate down to zero in the early days of the pandemic last year, and has left it there since. was trading earlier today in the secondary market at 0.08%. And although inflation remains low now, investors worry that the Fed could start to taper purchases unexpectedly should conditions change and upend the paper markets. The Fed statement offered no new guidance on that matter. I mean, we know since the beginning of the current crisis, the Fed has expanded its holdings by more than $3 trillion, bringing its balance sheet to $7.5 trillion. Phew! That's a lot of money. Fed officials remain cautious, however, on an economy that it believes has seen a two-speed rebound. Earners in the upper income brackets doing well. Those at the bottom, particularly workers in the service industries, not so much. And that disparity has formed much of the impetus behind the Fed's so-called flexible average inflation targeting regime. Oh, I love talking about this stuff, Melody.
I can tell.
Under the approach, the Fed will no longer raise rates in anticipation of inflation, but rather will tolerate higher levels in the interest of a more inclusive recovery. In the past, when the jobless rate would fall to levels, you know, consistent with what appeared to be full employment, roughly between 4% and 5% headline rate, the Fed would institute preventive hikes to stop inflation in its tracks. Now, the current economy is also showing conflicting signs of rising inflation, with housing and material costs pushing higher and services inflation pushing lower.
Well, you know, you have there's a broader measure of orders for all durable goods, goods that are meant to last at least 3 years. That increased 0.2% in December, less than forecast, as orders for commercial aircraft and defense hardware declined. Yeah, probably not a lot of demand out there for commercial aircraft at this point in time. Although I did see somebody make a pretty big purchase with Airbus, but orders placed with U.S. factories for business equipment rose for an eighth straight month, underscoring steady improvement in capital investment. Core capital good orders, which exclude the aircraft and military hardware, rose 0.6%. And the capital goods figure corroborate other recent data. A show manufacturing is on par with expectations. Investment in equipment, of course, remains strong. Supply chain constraints and workforce issues, such as workers calling out sick, have been restraints on production. Still lean inventories could continue to drive output in these coming months, Dave.
Well, economist Ian Shepherdson over at Pantheon Macroeconomics said the fate of the U.S. economy overall is much more contingent on the services sector, which is still hamstrung by the pandemic. Now, the shipments of core capital goods used to form estimates of business equipment investments within government's GDP reports climbed about 0.5% for the second straight month. Over the most recent 3 months, these shipments increased at a 17.5% annualized pace, roughly half of the 33% rate at the end of last year's third quarter. Now, the government's first estimate of fourth quarter GDP coming tomorrow is forecast to show the economy expanded at roughly a 4.2% annualized pace. Compared with the prior year, core capital goods orders rose about 1.8% last year, while total durable good bookings declined 7%. Melody.
Well, European Union, of course they would say, please, lift all these retaliatory tariffs on about $3.4 billion of U.S. goods if America removes its tariffs on metals imported from the bloc. So the European Union says they would lift those tariffs if we lifted the tariffs on the metals. Euro Commission official hope President Biden will immediately lift his predecessor's 25% duty on steel and 10% levy on aluminum products. I hope they don't. And Europe, in return, would lift countermeasures that include duties of as much as 25% on about $3.4 billion of imports of about 200 categories of U.S. products, like Harley-Davidson motorcycles, jeans, Levi-Strauss, and even some bourbon whiskey. Dave?
Well, we know Trump imposed a 25% steel tariff along with a 10% duty on aluminum back in March of 2018, using Section 232 of the Trade Expansion Act, which cites national security concerns. Some countries, like Brazil and South Korea, negotiated deals to avoid that same tariff, and Trump dropped the duty on imports from both Canada and Mexico. But the tariffs still apply to much of the world, including the EU. And in return, the EU triggered its retaliatory tariffs in June of 2018.
Well, you know, I don't know if these tariffs on the steel and aluminum had any impact in a negative way. So, hey, keep them on. I mean, that's the whole point. So I have to agree with, you know, keeping them on. And if we have to pay a little more for, you know, somebody has to pay a little more for a Harley Davidson or some jeans or some whiskey, so be it. But I don't think that's a good enough, I don't know. But yes, keep the tariffs on. I agree. UN report says job losses are much worse than the Great Recession. There's about four times as many jobs were lost last year due to the virus as during the worst part of the global financial crisis in 2009. The International Labor Organization estimated that the restrictions on businesses and public life eliminated about 9% of all work hours around the world last year. That's equivalent to 255 million full-time jobs, quadruple the impact of the Great Recession over a decade ago. And nobody thinks there's going to be any type of a fallout from this? This has been the most severe crisis for the world since the Great Depression of the 30s. This is going to outpace the Great Depression of the 30s. And it's pretty incredible, Dave.
Well, the ILO also noted that most people who lost work, Melody, stopped looking for a job altogether. And that jibes with numbers that we've been talking about, in fact, emphasizing for the past, certainly over the past year, but over the past 2 or 3 years, noting that the government's U3 report is among those misleading about, and that's when the numbers are more reliable, shall we say, than they've been during the pandemic, when for a variety of reasons, not the least of which, you know, a lot of people not around to compile, much less report accurate numbers. And so, you know, when we talk about an economy that is at 6.7% headline unemployment, as it supposedly is the U3 rate in the U.S. You know, when you count these people who are discouraged and have stopped working for looking for work in the short term, that's sort of after 6 months. You know, it jumps up to roughly double that. And if you include people who've been discouraged for a long time, who were just wiped off the government numbers 30 years ago, well, then the number is between 3 and 4 times that amount. It's good the ILO is emphasizing the people who stop looking for a job, because I'll tell you, Melody, my mission, which is probably going to be result in some bruises on my forehead from knocking it against a brick wall, but my mission this year is to try and convince one of my elected officials in Washington to talk about these headline unemployment numbers as being sort of an anachronism. Like, let's stop talking about them and let's start talking about U6 and what what's much more accurate and I think much more meaningful for Americans to hear about. In any event,
now I know what to get you for your birthday or Christmas is a football helmet.
There you go. I'm in the game. You know, this drop in employment, the ILO says, translates to a loss of $3.7 trillion in income around the world, what they're calling an extraordinary figure, with women and young people taking the brunt of those hits.
Well, It certainly is, and I mean, it just hits all classes of people. That's why I always have issues when they pinpoint a certain one. It hurts everybody. Everybody's hurt. Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter where you're at. It hurts.
But there are more specific.
Well, you know,
more
but
people,
all things some... are. But all things are relative. To I mean, you know, it's just and it's life. We always have to have excuses and blame things and so forth. But you know what? It's just life. Life is nasty sometimes, and it's very good most of the time. But Americans aren't going to be rushing back to the stores too soon, even after they get their shot. And so 40% of consumers say they plan to shop for apparel in stores either the same amount or less after they've been vaccinated. The consumer analytics firm polled, this is First Insight, they polled about 1,000 people online on January 13th. 44% they'll visit stores the same or less to buy footwear post-vaccination. And we'll finish up these numbers when we get back from the break. I missed the time. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Heading into the break, we were talking about, hey, those Americans aren't going to be rushing back to stores after their shot. And there was a consumer analytics firm pulled more than 1,000 people online on January 13th about their purchasing plans. And 44% said, well, they'll visit stores the same or less to buy footwear post-vaccination, while 45% that they would visit stores the same or less for beauty products, and 41% said this about luxury items, and 43% for electronics. So what is the lesson here? Is that while it might be widely believed that Americans will rush back to some level of normalcy after getting their shot, doesn't look like that's going to happen anytime soon. Number one, not everyone feels comfortable getting vaccinated, and this is all what Wendy was talking about. Number two, it's going to take a long time for people to get really comfortable and reacclimated to the way the world was. Now, isn't that an interesting statement? Claiming that the world is no longer the way it was, that we have to, it is kind of interesting. About one-third of survey respondents said that they are unsure about receiving the vaccine or will not get it, Dave.
Well, we do know that retailers that sell clothes and shoes, particularly those that are in shopping malls, have been among the hardest hit retailers because of this shift in spending. While sales of apparel and footwear online increased 27% in 2020, the total market for clothes and shoes in the U.S. shrank overall by 12%. And of course, companies like Macy's and American Eagle continue to close stores in malls throughout the country. At the same time, analysts say another wave of retail store closures is likely this year, with the severity of it hinging on consumer confidence and comfort levels. Don't see it rebounding anytime soon, if ever again.
35 million homes are at risk of natural disaster. Roughly about 35 million homes, about a third of the nation's housing stock are at high risk of a natural disaster. This is all from CoreLogic. Researchers at the real estate data firm looked at the combined severity and frequency of damage caused by natural disasters and created a composite risk score. Now, this score represents the average annual loss for seven individual hazards for about 105 million residential structures that are across this country. And, you know, you have the earthquakes, wildfires, floods, storms, winter storms, tropical storm surge, wind. The data show that nearly every property in the U.S. has exposure to peril risk. The unexpected nature of these occurrences should encourage businesses to better prepare for potential risks. The trickle-down effect of a catastrophic event seen most recently, of course, by this pandemic, can result in a shaky economy with high levels of unemployment and mortgage delinquencies. You know, Dave, you'd think that businesses would just normally prepare. But we're not a nation that prepares. We're a nation that waits till the last minute to do anything. We procrastinate about everything. And, I mean, it doesn't, again, how much money has been spent to do the survey. And, you know, you can just look at it and do the, you know, the averages of numbers. And it's life. There's earthquakes, there's storms, there's winter storms, there's hurricanes, there's... And I'm sure this was done for, you know, for insurance purposes, but...
Yeah, 22 events last year, $95 billion in estimated damages. And, of course, they say that risk to American real estate is only rising. I read a clip, I think it was in the New York Times over the weekend or late last week, that talked about a number of the properties in New York, the New York coast, still not taken care of after
Sandy.
Yep. And what was that, 2000, was it 2007? Was it that long ago now?
Yeah, it has been.
So it, and it's not just coastal areas. I mean, you got Kansas and Nebraska, Oklahoma, along the Mississippi River, and of course, along large swaths of the Gulf and Atlantic coasts. Things likely not to get better in that respect anytime soon. So if there's a place to plan and prepare, Melody, boy, this is where you live is certainly one of them.
And I'll tell you what, you know, I lived in Arizona for a large part of my, you know, adult life. There isn't anything that happens there. It's hot. Well, that's all. You might get sunstroke, you know, but hey, heat stroke, but that's all. That's all you know. You might get a little dust storm every now and then, but that doesn't destroy anything. Mm. You can, you know, depending on where you're at, you might get some flash flooding. But you pretty much know where those areas are at, so you don't go there. So, yeah, the weather conditions are great in Arizona. And I never had an allergy problem when I lived in Arizona. But Anyway, levity is golden today. And we're going to take a look at money printing, Dave.
It's true. The mundane subject of money printing. If you spend any time reading these days, you'll see a lot of financial industry people talking about macroeconomic and monetary policy. That quiet, by the way, is me yawning in the background. The reason is that a lot of them are long on Bitcoin, and they think hyperinflation and money printing narratives are good for lining their pockets. Usually these folks start off with a chart of the Fed's historic balance sheet, which we mentioned earlier in the program, and they talk about how the amount of dollars in the economy has almost doubled since last spring or something like that, but what's really happening behind the scenes? You know, when the Fed buys a treasury, what it's really doing is replacing one kind of government liability, say a 10-year treasury note, with another kind of government liability. An overnight reserve held at the Fed. If you're a bank that sold a treasury to the Fed, you're given a longer-term asset that yields something for a shorter-term asset that yields something else. But in reality, I mean, no new money has actually entered the system. The government doesn't have any less debt. All that's happened is that the government's consolidated balance sheet, that's the treasury in the Fed combined, has shortened the term of its liabilities. Now, after the Fed buys a treasury, there's less long-term debt outstanding and more short-term debt outstanding. And that's essentially it. And now, as to how the government does get more cash into the economy, the one way that happens is through fiscal policy, more spending. In this case, or in the case of the last few years, especially, a lot more spending. And indeed, the government has been spending a lot of money lately, running up big deficits to replace the lost income over the last year anyway that the private sector is experiencing during the pandemic. Now, net outlays soared over the last year, particularly in the spring when the first stimulus hit. This money goes straight to the private sector. And when you combine this spending with a surge in household savings, surprising enough, we saw a huge rise in the amount of people, the amount of money that people have in their checking accounts and their other savings vehicles. But all this is missing a big chunk of the story. which is that for the most part, money is created by the private sector. Tech people, having learned about monetary policy from watching the Bitcoin issuance schedule, think that all dollars originally start at the government level and then filter out into the economy. Essentially, the opposite is so. The private sector, particularly banks, creates money, all new money, that is, all the time. The basic gist is that when you take out a loan from the bank, you know, say to buy a house, that money doesn't come from somewhere. It's created anew right there on the spot. If the bank gives you a loan for, say, $1 million, no banker has to go looking for that million to lend. Instead, that your bank account just has $1 million added to it, and voila, you have $1 million more in spending power.
That's the problem.
isn't the magic wonderful, Melody?
Yes.
You know, the late economist John Kenneth Galbraith once put it, the process by which banks create money is so simple that the mind is repelled. Well, it does. It does boggle the mind. And now, of course, this fluctuates over time. You know, 15 years ago when the housing market was red hot and anyone could get a mortgage, new money was being created at a huge clip. In 2009, it was just the opposite. It was hard, sometimes impossible to get a loan. Well, this is always being adjusted, and importantly, the Fed's policy rate is only a marginal, negligible, in fact, factor when new money needs to be created. It's the Treasury. Private sector animal spirits, the ups and downs of the cycle, are what determine the pace at which private actors create new money. If the economy is booming and bankers feel that borrowers are highly likely to repay them, they'll create new money. They'll give you a loan. In a slump, nah, not so much. They'll create less. Bottom line, the Fed really doesn't print money. The Treasury prints money. It prints it by spending it. It destroys it by taxing it. Then the real action is done by private actors like you and me, whose spending impulses are determined by the broader economic sense. Make sense? That, Melody, is this week's Levity is Golden.
And it's all so wrong. And it's all so wrong. And that's just more reasons why you need to buy gold and silver. 800-375-4188. And hey, the SBA, Small Business, said last night that it has approved 400,000 Paycheck Protection Program loans worth about $35 billion so far. Is this what you've been talking about, Dave? Out of the $284 billion of total available funding, these are the first figures of the status of the forgivable loan program since it relaunched on January 11th. It's just forgivable loan program. I just have such big issues with that, you know? It's just, anyway, the program is intended, of course, to keep the small businesses and jobs afloat. It's also abused, but the latest tranche is off to a slower start. You know, the protocols that were put in place to kind of tamp down on fraud. It's kind of helped preventing some of the legitimate ones from second-time borrowers from applying. And, I mean, Dave, doesn't anybody get what's... I mean, it's like nobody really cares. It doesn't matter. Oh, it's just stimulus. We need to stimulate. It's like this money is just flowing to these businesses, and I have more empathy for these businesses and these mom and pop shops, and you know, people who have struggled and can't work, that who want to work, and you know, forget those who don't want to work. They're part of the, that's another problem. But it's just like this has become normal now. They have normalized it. So for every situation that we face, we can expect stimulus. And the problem is, Dave, it might prevent the bad scenario today. But what happens tomorrow? It's just mind-boggling. And, I mean, billions, it just doesn't, the numbers don't mean anything anymore. That's how worthless the money is. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So pretty soon it's going, here's a couple trillion. Well, we're already there. Here's a couple trillion. So 1.9 trillion, 2 trillion. Oh, wow. If you add that, then it's 3 trillion. And hey, we're already up to 30 trillion. So fuck, what's wrong with 35 trillion?
Hey, we'll get there after the infrastructure deal.
I mean, it's just like, it's mind-boggling. And it doesn't matter. That's even more mind-boggling, Dave. For now, it doesn't matter. But anyway, so I don't know. Take over. Oh, shoot. You got 20 seconds, Dave.
Oh, well, that's okay. I'm just going to give a shout-out to Cross River Bank, headquartered in Fort Lee, New Jersey. Across the Hudson River from Manhattan, which led all major lenders with the lowest average loan. Perhaps the ones really looking out for the moms and pops. $24,000, their average loan, literally catering to true small businesses. Way to go, Cross River.
All right. Way to go, Dave. And way to go, listeners. We'll be back tomorrow. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.